I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello. My name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello, here we are at episode 147. Today, I'm going to take you into the world of Luwet, which features a pink bear that seems to pop up all over the world. I've been aware of the pink bear for quite some time, but didn't really know too much about it or its creator, Paul Robinson, until we both had neighbouring rooms at the Fulham Town Hall. And I'm glad to say I'm showing alongside Luwet again at the moment, over at the Factory Project. We're both part of gallery number 32's Between Frames. I'll go into more detail about the Ministry of Arts artwork in that show in the next episode. Luwet also has a solo show at the moment called Unconscious Therapy, where they're taking over three floors of 95 New Bond Street, which is being curated by the wonderful MC Lammas. Well, I'm going to keep this intro nice and short for a change, so please come with me and enter the pink world of Luwet. Anyway, Paul, I've got 7 questions that I ask each artist.
Right, okay.
The first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
So how do I explain what I'm doing to someone else? I guess like the elevator pitch is that I travel the world with a pink bear, and it's kind of, that's the quick summary, and then people then are like, what do you mean? And then go into more depth and like talk about, you know, the pink bear kind of surfaced out of when I was doing CBT therapy, so cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
And it was kind of looking for this happy memory or something to latch onto to kind of put into my artwork or, you know, make my life a bit more joyful. And it was kind of, that was like the most joyful memory I had. And it's like, there's a little picture of it over there. And it's like, it was when I was like, just there.
Yeah.
When I was like little, so that's like a portrait of my mum, dad and brother with this big care bear. And it was like how, you know, memory changes. So yeah. I kind of, what I remember was it was a big pink bear. So I kind of like really reduced it down. And that's kind of what I latched onto. And then over the last 11 years, just been developing work based on that.
Oh, so it's your comfortable zone.
Yeah. And it, because it's like, you know, some stuff can be quite challenging or, you know, like kind of mental health or this kind of stuff that's in the press that, you know, that's kind of going on, you know, in social, you know, in the other world. And it's kind of like looking at that through the eyes of the bear or through the comfort of the bear to kind of explore these issues.
And if you don't mind me just delving, you don't have to answer this, but the CBT that you had, was it because you wanted it or you needed it?
I felt I needed it. So I was kind of, yeah, just like really depressed, kind of felt like a big black hole. And I felt like if I didn't kind of do something, I didn't know where the hole would go. So I guess I intervened, you know, I was kind of with it enough to recognize I needed to do something. And I think I used to kind of suffer from like disassociation. So I'd kind of disconnect within myself as well. So it'd be like, if I'd speak, it'd be like my voice would be coming out here and I'd be going back here.
Yeah.
And I just struggled to kind of do all that. And so we talked through all that as well as kind of other stuff going on. And it really kind of helped bridge this kind of connection to other people. And I think that's what the bear was kind of about. It's like a connection. It was like, I guess, how I wanted to be, like, you know, this thing that not necessarily stood out, but didn't kind of hide in the shadows.
And
the CBT really helped with that. Good. Like, I've done a few different kinds as well. So I did, one was just kind of talking, and we actually talked and we drew things as well. So drew kind of what was going on in my head, which obviously gave me ideas for my artwork as well.
Yeah.
And then I also did like CBT hypnosis, which was like when I was at exhibitions, I always found it hard to talk to people. So we'd actually go through like mantras, and then these would kind of be like planted in your head while you're in hypnosis, which was like really interesting. Like the first session, I was kind of like, I don't believe any of this. And then at the end of it, I kind of woke up and I was like, what just kind of happened there?
And did it work, that hypnotherapy type?
I couldn't say for sure, but now I find it a lot easier talking to people now than I used to. Like, I wouldn't be able to do this 10 years ago. So I think it must have helped.
Yeah.
Subconsciously.
There's no way of finding out, is there?
Other than
if you're more comfortable speaking to people, then yes is the answer, I suppose.
And I did like some like courses on like public speaking to try and help, you know, just with how you kind of get things out as well, or like just how you actually talk in terms of, you know, knowing what you're on about and then kind of having more constructed ways of talking. It's kind of lots of things that came together that really helped kind of move me forward, I think.
Well, I know exactly what you're speaking about, because I've always, when I'm speaking one-to-one with someone that I'm not very familiar with, I would often feel a bit frustrated and start feeling pressure where I'm just having a one-to-one conversation. I've learned over the years to blag it so no one would be aware that I'm feeling like that. But inside, I'm not just sort of, the water isn't slowly, you know, calmly flowing. There's plenty of waves and white water even as I'm talking. And that was one of the reasons why I started this podcast, just to get me speaking to people that I don't know about a subject that I'm very familiar with. I don't know whether it has actually helped. No, it has actually helped.
Yeah.
But I still feel like that sometimes, but I'm more confident in the way I'm
speaking. The more you talk about it, the more you're able to kind of vocalise what's going on in your head. Because I just felt like I couldn't get anything out before. It'd be like, obviously you can in pictures, but then it's like explaining that in words was always the tricky bit. And people kind of want the story, the narrative, rather than just the image. Which I think the same with your work as well. It's like the narrative is really important to the work.
Oh, I totally agree. Well, when I'd seen your pink bear, whose name is Luap, I'd seen Luap about here and there for a while.
Yeah.
And when we went to Fulham, and I was given my room in Fulham where to create my installation, I had a look around, saw a pink room at the end. And when I walked down there, I was like, wow, this feels to me, from an artist's point of view, it feels a little sinister. And Ben Moore, the curator, when I was with him, and I said, like, this is possibly the most sinister room out of the lot. And he was going, but how can it be? He said, it's the nicest, most fun room here, a pink bear with a tricycle, you know? And I said, no, I said, there's undertones here. And then when we met a little while later and you told me what it was about, I was quite relieved, should I say, that my first interpretation of it aesthetically was correct, you know?
I think it straddles that line between like comfortable and uneasy, which I think, you know, you go through in this therapy. It's like, you know, some days you're better than others. And I think that's what the bear's kind of there for. It's this, yeah, like you said earlier, comfort zone that kind of helps you kind of navigate this journey that we're on.
Yeah, because I think it was the costume as well, because you don't know if there's anyone in it or not.
A lot of people have said that to me.
That was the sinister side. No, I mean that the environment it was in was far from sinister, but it just had undertones, you know, it made me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what it was, but it worked. It made you feel uncomfortable and at ease at the same time. So
I think it's the potential of the movement that,
definitely.
That form of it. Yeah.
When was your first interest in art? Did you have art at home?
I think I've always done art. Like my dad's creative. You know, he can draw like photographs and he's always, you know, done woodwork and stuff as well. So I think, you know, come from Grimsby, it's not like a, you know, well-off kind of place. So my dad would kind of make the things that you'd see in shops. So I think like when I was little, I had a Thomas the Tank Engine bed, but instead of just going and buying it, he made one exactly the same as the one in the shop and hand painted it all on himself. And like I had a basketball ring, but he'd made all the backboard and, you know, did all that himself.
Excellent.
And I remember like him drawing the turtles and stuff and it looked just like the, you know, on the TV show. So. But he'd never draw for me. I remember always going, if you want it, go do it yourself.
Nice.
So it was like, you know, you'd have to learn. And then I think, you know, my granddad did like watercolors. I remember doing when my nana died, we went on a trip around Scotland and like we were doing watercolors together, which was really nice.
Oh,
so,
nice.
You know, there's creativity through the whole family. I think like my auntie made curtains. So it's like, I think creativity is, you know, lots of different forms of it. But it wasn't a family that kind of frowned upon creativity and was like, you know, get a real job. It was, they just encouraged you to kind of do whatever your passion was and as long as you kind of went for it.
Well, I was always quite a creative kid, but I was never artistic.
Yeah.
And someone asked me once about creativity. And I said, I'd always been creative, but I never really created anything. And it was more the fact that, like you was just saying, that if we need something, then, you know, we had nothing as when I was a kid. Yeah. So you would make it, you know, or mend it, you know, or whatever. But you was always doing it like that, you know?
I think it's just about, like, for me, it was always like looking at something and then imagining what else you could do with it. So it's like, I remember, like, at school, for Christmas, you'd make like the little stars and stuff like that. And then I remember thinking like, oh, well, I reckon I can make a bigger one and end up doing this star that was so many sides. And I think that's what it is. It's just like, how can you push an idea and, you know, tell a story with it?
Yeah, before it implodes in on itself.
Yeah. And it was like, I remember doing like murals and stuff at school as well, because the teachers like really encouraged it in my school. I think there was only one teacher, like it was a geography teacher, and he's like, you'll never make any money from drawing.
Yeah, thanks,
all the rest were like really encouraging. I think that makes a difference, you know, people kind of like really kind of pushing you along, and then you kind of, I guess then it's the artistic pursuit of like the ideas rather than being hindered.
Yeah, definitely. When was it that you wanted to become an artist? Do you know when that was?
I feel like you just are one, though. I don't know if there's a particular point. I think that the hard bit about being an artist is I think you know what you want to do, but it's just hard to get where you want to get if you kind of don't have anything. Because it's like, you know, there's the cost of making the work and then there's kind of getting it out there. And then I think you know, there's so many people that want to be an artist, but to be an artist is quite a difficult pursuit. And I think also it's kind of, you know, you're laying yourself out there, because it's, you know, a lot of it's usually kind of comes from within. So I think it's just, yeah, I think you always are one, but it's just getting it out there.
Yeah. Is art your job, or do you have another job?
It is now. Yeah, I used to be a creative director, like in advertising. So I kind of did that for, I think, close to 15 years. And it was kind of saving up enough money to be able to give myself a chance to actually just pursue the art. And then that's kind of happened over the last few years. And then now, like, I'm selling enough to kind of maintain that. So this is the thing. It's like just taking that time to get to a point. And it was like, you know, it was difficult because you're working 8 hours a day in a creative industry. So that's kind of draining, but it's draining in the sense that you're draining your creativity, but also you're having to work on ideas that are kind of different to your own artwork. And then you'll come home and then do your own artwork. So I felt it just cost me kind of some life experiences, but yeah. I don't feel I've missed out. But I think it, you know, I've really had to just kind of knuckle down and get this stuff done.
Well, I know a few artists that were in the advertising industry. Yeah. And I mean, there's, including yourself, there's three I can think of, like, off the top of my head. And all three of you have the focus of their work is a big, bold, colourful object.
Yeah.
Or artwork that has plenty of layers. And all the time, it's, you know, that the idea, like Luat, it can just, no matter what else you do in your career, that will always be able to, it's so strong, it can live with you throughout your career, I think, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, well, in advertising, obviously, you're trying to create something iconic. But
yeah.
I think, you know, when I do my paintings, there's kind of a real looseness about them in the, you know, the surfaces and stuff, which you're, I don't think you can do that in advertising. It's because it's all quite clean. So I try and, you know, have it quite textured and, you know, there's depth within the work that is kind of a bit removed from the kind of cleanliness of, you know, graphic design and stuff.
I mean, which piece that you've created do you think has got the strongest emotional connection?
Tricky one. There's a piece that for me was quite interesting that's going to be in this show I'm doing, and it's like a self-portrait, because it's like the bear's kind of stood there against the wall, and then there's me photographing the bear. So I kind of, it's almost like a double self-portrait, but it's like we're both hiding behind something, and then obviously I've painted it as well, so there's a few layers there of kind of about the self.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that there's the idea of the self inside the bear, which is like behind a mask. And then there's myself, but it's the back of me. So it's kind of hidden. And then the front of me's got a camera there. So I think there's quite a lot of interesting things going on there. And then it's in a forest, so it's kind of isolated as well. So I think that kind of sums up some of the process that I went through in CBT.
Yeah. Well, Luat being obviously pulled backwards.
Yeah.
As soon as you told me it was to do with depression and that he was your comfort zone, if you like.
Yeah.
He or she. Is it? I suppose it is genderless, isn't it?
I think, yeah, it's somewhat ambiguous, yeah.
But when you told me that the pink bear was your comfort zone, then I saw that as the opposite to you, so that you can always work with it. It's always as if it's a 3D representation of the thoughts that you're having.
And exploring this other world. Like some of the paintings, like that I've created for this series, like they're kind of like mirrors as well. So mirrors in water. So there's one where the bear's on this, like, I guess, hillside looking into a lake. And then it's kind of dark in the lake and kind of a bit distorted. but the painting's actually flipped upside down.
Yeah.
So it's like the one at the top's actually the distorted dark view, and then it's looking down and seeing like the clear view. And it's like, that was kind of an idea that, you know, sometimes our own reality is kind of this kind of dark view inside, but the reality that other people see is this kind of clean exterior, right, and it's a bit kind of mixed up.
So Luep is just an extension of your thoughts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is its name Luep, or is the world you've created Luep?
I guess I don't think I've thought of that.
Referred to it just now as the bear.
I refer to it as the pink bear.
The pink bear. But I've referred to it since I met you.
Yeah.
I've referred to it as Luep.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do actually call the bear Luep.
Because where it was a mirror image of yourself.
Sense in terms of like, it is the world and the artwork that I create is Luep in the sense, yeah.
Because I didn't know if the bear was Luep,
yeah,
or Luep was your...
The artist.
The artist.
Yeah.
And
well, I suppose the bear is kind of like an extension of myself in some ways, because it, you know, explores this narrative and the ideas. So I guess it's one and all the same.
A bit of both.
And I think that's what's interesting about that portrait thing is like, you know, both sides of myself there in this image, in this kind of original environment that kind of went to the therapy about. Because like the old paintings were like these, like trees, I call them like the lone soldiers, and they're kind of like trees that you see in like the countryside, like stood there on their own.
Yeah.
Like battling the wind and kind of a bit dead looking. And so I did this whole series like that, they're kind of just these depressed looking trees. And you know, you have some like behind like fences, like as if they're like, you know, fenced off from the rest of the world.
And it is when you see the bear in those environments, I mean, not that a pink bear has an environment anyway, I'm sure it fits in anywhere, but when you see your pink bear in the woods, it is straight away Bigfoot, you know, the thing that did I see it, is it really there?
Yeah. The funny thing, someone told me a story recently. So I did a photo shoot in Patagonia in Argentina.
Yeah.
At the top of these mountains. So like to get up there, it's a 12-hour hike, and I'm like carrying like all the bear stuff and like 20 kilos of camera equipment. And then someone was telling me that their friend, like they'd seen an Instagram post or something they shared, and it was like, I saw that bear at the top of this mountain. And it was like, it's just quite funny to, you know, of all the places you could be and like, you know, people see it and then go home and remember it because it is so like eye-catching.
Yeah.
The standout.
And they're probably thinking that it was this iconic sort of Argentinian story, you know, that's why it's there. And it turned out to be a guy from Grimsby. What do you do to relax, Paul?
Well, I like to kind of go out hiking and stuff, but that, I guess that feels like a bit like work as well. It's all
up Argentinian kind of, mountains.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Bareback.
Camping, yeah. camping. I just did like some camping around Scotland. That was quite fun. Nice. Apart from the mozzies that kind of bit me alive. I think it's all part of the stuff that's in the work, actually. It's kind of like, you know, having campfires, you know, seeing some friends and kind of having a chat. But it's all kind of art-related now. So it's kind of like the work and the kind of relaxing is all one and the same.
Yeah.
So I feel quite lucky in that way now that I'm kind of, you know, my work and kind of my dream is all kind of happening together.
Yeah. But they have literally, your dream and your world has literally merged.
Yeah, it's all merged to one, yeah. I wonder if it's all real.
You never know. You might wake up and you're still a teenager in Grimsby.
I've often wondered that, like it'd be weird. you wake up in a hospital bed somewhere.
And it was all just a dream. If there was you and five other artists, Paul, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Well, luckily I've got a load of books by my side so I can look.
So you can just intellectually look to one side to make it look as though you're thinking.
Maybe it'd be kind of people that inspired my work. So I've got like some Japanese artist, Kuniyoshi. So I really like the kind of woodblock, you know, the Japanese woodblock painting, which kind of inspired like all the flat way of painting. Like Robert Rauschenberg for kind of like the layering. Who else? It's quite a limited amount. There's so many books on my shelves. I think it'd be cool doing something with Jeff Koons, because I've always liked it. Or it'd be him or Klaus Oldenburg for kind of like, you know, the big sculptures. I think obviously Jeff Koons is quite shiny, but Klaus Oldenburg is kind of, you know, there are all these like found materials, like the big hamburgers. You know, and someone, you know, more recent like that could be like So Your Soul, who's kind of doing all the stuff with fur, not fur, like felt.
Well, I think Klaus Oldenburg, I think that's the first time he's come up, you know. And I remember discovering Klaus Oldenburg when I first got into art. I really fell for his artwork.
I think it's just the scale of it and kind of the positioning of it. I really like. Like, it was my GCSE school teacher that kind of introduced me to him. And like, I made this 6-foot toilet at school and I had like legs coming out of it that were kind of painted in Andy Warhol colors.
Brilliant.
And I had like bright pink Calvin Klein's on it. They were meant to be red, but when I washed them or dyed them, they came out bright pink.
Excellent.
But no, I like his work. And just, like, I think, you know, he did the giant match sticks and I think it's just the kind of, you know, similar to the bear up the mountain. It's kind of something unexpected in a place you wouldn't expect.
You don't expect it to be there, but it looks good in that environment.
And I think, and then the scale of it as well. So I think that's kind of an important part of it. Like, I was looking at doing a giant pink bear. That was a commission that was meant to happen last year, but kind of fell through because of COVID. But we're going to like do a 10-meter bear near Bond Street.
Nice.
And it had been, I think, again, just put, not like a hard sculpted one, but actually, you know, in the soft fur. So it's kind of, again, it's just this playing with scale. So how many is that? That was 3, 4. Who else? I've always liked Gerhard Richter as well, like the photorealism. But I saw a really good show, well, I guess it's in the permanent collection in San Francisco. And like, I think there's the back of the woman in the cardigan. And it's like blurred, and it's just like this, it's just the surface of the pieces that I really like. You know, that kind of drag through it. You know, there's a few people doing that now, but I think he's, you know, he kind of trained in photorealism, but he also trained in abstraction.
Yeah.
Kind of that interplay between the two. And they're just, I think it's the colours and stuff as well, you know, the way bits pop out.
Yeah, I like that when people bring two worlds into one. Just successfully. I mean, it can easily look quite bad, but it's quite hard to make it look very good.
And I think, because I think I've often wondered if, like, the, you know, the big drag paintings he does, if they've actually come out of kind of, you know, scratching photos. When you scratch them, you get all those layers. And if it's like he kind of came up with the idea from actually, you know, looking at a macroscopic version of a photo and thinking, how do I kind of blow that thing up?
If you wasn't an artist, what would you like to be?
No, I always liked maths and science at school.
Oh, nice.
Well, I think, science is always kind of, I guess it's like art in some ways that you're experimenting. We always like making things that blew up. There was this thing called Jolly Roger's Cookbook. One of them had them at school, and we found out to make gunpowder.
Wow.
Got the recipe, and then we had to choose salts and stuff to make at school. So we chose the salts that you actually put in gunpowder, and then took it at home and then made some gunpowder with it.
Was it successful?
Yeah, we did some little explosions.
And how little were they?
Well, one of the guys, I remember coming back to school and he didn't have any eyebrows. Like, yeah.
Excellent.
The things, because obviously back then we didn't have like iPhones and iPads. And
yeah.
We used to cycle to Hubbard Hills, which is about 15 miles away.
Wow.
And then I think it was like, you know, it was empty. There's no one around. And there was like this little hut and we kind of, I think we'd empty like fireworks and stuff out into it as well. And we'd have only been about 11, I think.
Yeah, I think it's probably best you don't become a scientist. Go to the maths. You can't blow anything up with that.
Yeah. But I think that's the same with art, though. It's kind of experimenting with materials and stuff. Yeah. Like yesterday, I was having to finish some resin, and that was with fire. And it was like, I couldn't, the blowtorch had stopped working. And I was panicking because it's basically, there's like, probably 2 or 3 months worth of painting underneath. And then there's like 4 layers of resin and this was the final layer. Yeah. And then you use the blowtorch to get the bubbles out to get this mirror of like perfect glass finish. And it stopped working. I was just like, oh, it's like, it's ruined. Like, so I was like panicking. Then I got like a camping stove and I was like trying to use that. And then there's these big fire coming up.
Yeah.
I eventually got one, but it was like running around because you only got 30 minute kind of working time before the resin cures.
Yeah.
And it was, got it done, but it was a panic.
Well, I know you've got 2 shows coming up and we're in one together.
Yeah.
If we can talk about the factory project first.
Yeah.
And that is via gallery number 32.
Yep.
Are you able to tell us yet what you're doing for that?
Yeah, there's kind of a connection between the 2 shows, actually. So the one with Gallery 32, it's these doors. And basically, I've installed photography on glass panels. So nice. They're going to be stood up. And it's the pink bear, obviously, holding a bunch of flowers that's kind of disappearing. So they're kind of like as if they've been blown away. And it's kind of I'm using it kind of as a metaphor for life, that kind of, you know, life's kind of, you know, it's beautiful, but it's kind of fast and fragile like flowers. And it's, you know, it's here and then it's gone. So it's kind of make the most of it and kind of enjoy what it has to offer. And I think this piece, you know, each panel is, it's almost like an animated GIF put in, you know, in stills. So the first one's kind of, this bunch is kind of, you know, start to move. And then the second is kind of moving past the bear. And then by the end door is just holding a stem. So it's kind of like, almost like representing the skeleton, I guess, is, you know, life's kind of finished. And so that's kind of a piece. And then I think we're going to have flowers on the floor, you know,
nice.
For the opening. Yeah. Kind of present that journey, how it's kind of come and gone.
And how many doors have you got there?
There's 4.
Nice.
And they're all kind of, you know, none of the, they're all different. So they're like the first and last one are kind of these full length ones. So you get the full picture on both. And then there's this transition in the middle. And they're all kind of, you know, they're all different colors and some have got frosted glass. So they're really nice in kind of the aesthetic of the doors as well.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a door is kind of like, you know, there's that obviously time of saying like, you know, one door closes, another one opens. And I think there's a play on that as well, that, you know, we're on this journey moving through things. So
yeah,
you just have to make the most of it.
And that is at the Thameside Industrial Estate, which is just next to the Tate and Lyle factory, because it's Tate and Lyle's old warehouses, isn't it?
Yeah, huge spaces.
And that's running from the 9th to the 22nd of October. And the second installation that you've got.
So that's a solo show in New Bond Street.
Unconscious Therapy, which obviously the name comes from what you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, and it's but I was kind of thinking like the unconscious therapy is kind of like the things we do to kind of make ourselves happy that maybe we don't think of as therapy.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of the work is kind of about looking inwards, and there's, you know, again, I've got some of the pieces like this flower, and I've got the stills of that that are going to be hung, and then there's, you know, there's different kind of moods and stuff within the paintings.
And where is that?
That's 95 New Bond Street. So close to Bond Street station. It's literally just around the corner.
Curated by MC Lammas.
Yeah. And then got like Daisy Green collection, kind of doing the canapes and drinks for the opening.
Nice.
And then we've got a gin sponsor, which is the Soho, King of Soho Gin.
Nice.
And then Great Portland Estates are the guys that have kind of given me this space to take over. But it's the biggest space I've done. It's like 3 floors.
Oh, wow.
6,000 square foot of space. So the ground floor is going to be an installation. So I've got like 150 meters of pink fur coming.
Shit.
And basically lining all the walls. So it'd be kind of like this, I guess it's that comfort zone, but the whole room.
Yeah.
Maybe like that. And then the basement level is going to be more of a traditional kind of show with paintings. And then upstairs is going to be like video installation and projections and sound. So it's kind of, you know, it's quite a different kind of show on each floor.
What is in the installation other than the fur-lined walls?
It's going to be the fur, plus it's all going to be lit pink as well.
Nice.
And there's probably going to be a bear in there as well. But it's kind of, I think it's more abstract in a sense. It's not kind of, you know, obviously I could have just put paintings or, you know, put some bears in there, similar to what I did at Fulham, but this was I think it's more of a sensation of what the bear means. And it's kind of, you know, this feeling of warmth when you kind of go in the room. And I think pink's quite a tricky colour because it can feel cold sometimes as well. Yeah. Or kind of, you know, it's like a really hard colour to photograph as well because it really screws with like the white balance on a phone. And, you know, I saw that Fulham kind of, you know, some people that have these really vivid photos and others that kind of look like this dirty brown.
Yeah, color. Yeah.
And it's like, I think pink, you know, you're going to experience this colour rather than kind of necessarily photograph it or you know, become a piece of like a painting or something like that.
Well, you've definitely created something that people want to be in a photograph with. We saw that at Fulham. It was unquestionably the most photographed there, I would have thought, wouldn't you?
Possibly, yeah.
And that's never a bad thing, right?
No.
So, yeah, walking into a large pink environment. And
yeah, I hope people kind of think about it, though, as well, kind of what it means, though, rather than just kind of... I just kind of hope it makes people feel something rather than just thinking, oh, quick, get my photo, come in and go. It's like... I just hope it kind of makes them question it.
Definitely. Have you got anything else coming up after the two exhibitions or the installations that you've just spoken about?
I'd like to go travelling and do some more like photography because it feels like a long time because of COVID. Like normally I'd go to like 4 or 5 different places a year to kind of do photos. And I think the last 2 years... a year and a half, like, haven't actually been anywhere, so I just want to get away.
Oh, you're missing it.
I was meant to do this trip to Mongolia in 2020. Like, the pink bear was going to be on horseback with a golden eagle, and we're like going hunting in the mountains. But it didn't happen. So, yeah, I want to
get. What do other cultures make of it?
I think it's the same all over the world. They just think you're weird, like traveling with your feet there.
But when you tell them what it represents,
yeah, it brings a smile to people's faces, and that kind of makes it worth it, I think.
Yeah. Well, you always turning something that is relatively scary, frightening, potentially dangerous into something that absolutely isn't. That's always a play on your mind anyway, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, it just makes it easier to approach, I think. Yeah. I think there have been some pieces that I did unsettle people. There was like an old series and people were kind of like, oh, that really makes me think. So I think that maybe that's something I want to explore next as well, is kind of, you know, all this work recently has been quite safe in the sense that it's kind of the barren kind of natural environments, but it's kind of maybe it needs to go somewhere a bit uneasy. Maybe not for myself, it's kind of, you know, maybe exploring other people's kind of fears as a project as well.
And how do you think that would work out?
I don't know yet. I think that's part of the research that I have to do next. I hope it just brings some comfort to other people, though. They'd kind of recognise that and then, you know, help them break down their fears. I think that's what it was for me. It was breaking down a fear of kind of talking to people and getting out there. And, you know, there's lots of people having different fears.
Yeah, so it is that thing that you need a something to get you through, and yours just happened to be the pink bear, and it could be anything for anyone, couldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just finding whatever that is. But I think it's about finding something rather than just kind of, you know, going down that dark hole.
Yeah.
I think it's so easy to do it.
Similarly, for several years, I'd been sort of dragging my past along with me. And being a sort of person with two lives, my old sort of criminal life, which is what my art's all about, and me, but I was struggling sort of living two separate lives. And then during a conversation one time, I just decided to name the old me. And I used to have a name that I used to give the police and, you know, sort of book into hotels like an alias, you know, and it was Roy Maynard. And during conversation, I said, like I was just venting off that I was pissed off with these two, like my life and my old life, the old me and the new me, you know, is what I'm always saying to people. And I was just saying that I'm finding it so fucking difficult. I said, but the old me being, I said, I should name him like Roy Maynard. And then all of a sudden I was like, fucking, that's what to do. And straight away, as soon as I started detaching him or the old me from the new me, and giving him a whole different name as well as an identity, because he's the old me's different from the me you're talking to. As soon as I gave him a name, that sort of absolutely parted him from me, you know? And fucking hell, if someone would have said to me 5 or 10 years ago, just give him a name, because that was as simple as it was, you know?
Yeah.
And it really, straight away, it fucking helped.
It felt lighter, kind of.
Yeah, straight away.
Yeah.
And, you know, my Roy Maynard was your pink bear, you know?
Yeah, I think that's what the unconscious therapy title was. It's like finding that thing. And it could be like, you know, going swimming or going to the gym or all these little things we do to kind of help ourselves feel better.
Yeah. So you've got the factory project via gallery number 32 is from the 9th to the 22nd. Of October, and Unconscious Therapy at 95 New Bond Street, curated by MC Lammas, is from the 13th to the 17th of October. So, October, you're a pretty busy, pretty busy bear.
Yeah. All right, cool. Mate.
Right, well, thank you for your time.
Thank you, and speak to you soon.
And I'll see you soon. All the best, mate.
Bye.
Cheers, Paul. Ta-da, mate. Well, hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're unable to support us on Patreon, leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to this podcast really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast, or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Anything is appreciated, but either way, thanks for listening, and until next week, ta-da.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.